Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Adam Catterall.
You're better than that.
On TalkSport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast from TalkSport. I'm Adam Catterall. Pleasure as always to be in your company. Myself and Spencer Oliver. We're joined by a plethora of top quality guests on Saturday night just gone. But don't worry, if you missed it, I'm going to stick it all in this podcast for you. Little reminder, please subscribe and subscribe to the TalkSport Boxing YouTube channel. Now that you've done that, we can get cracking, shall we? This Friday night, I'm sure it's not passed you by, Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou, knockout chaos. Catchy title, we all want to see fireworks. Here's me and Spencer getting a little excited.
Listen, huge show on Friday night. And do you know what? I'm really looking forward to our show on Friday night as well. Like you say, we've been having a little chat out there in the green room. There's a couple of ideas bouncing around.
Yeah.
Could be quite exciting. It could be quite fun for the listeners getting involved in the show as well. So, yeah, really looking forward to Friday night. But, yeah, massive, massive event over in Saudi Arabia. Can't wait for that one. Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou. Can he pull it off, Ngannou? Can he upset Anthony Joshua? I mean, that is the big question. I mean, he put in an unbelievable performance, didn't he, against Tyson Fury. I know a lot of people saying that Fury was not in the shape that he should have been in, etc., etc. But you've got to respect what Francis Ngannou done to Tyson Fury. And Anthony Joshua has to respect that as well. And I think he will respect that. But he's got a tough fight on his hands there. And Ngannou, trust me, is like, I know... He's getting a lot of stick saying he's a one-fight novice, which he is, yes. We can't take that away.
Yes.
But what I took from the fight with Tyson Fury was the guy knows his way around the ring. He's got a good boxing IQ. He knows he's got that adaptability. He knows how to change things up. And more importantly, he has no fear factor, you know, and I think that that's what he's going to try and use against Joshua. I mean, fascinating fight. Going to be a great night.
Earlier in the week, Matchroom promoter Eddie Hearn, and obviously promoter of Anthony Joshua, was telling TalkSport that he is confident that AJ beats Francis Ngannou, but he can't get complacent.
They've got a great game plan, and AJ's full of confidence. He's punching harder than ever. He's more aggressive than he's ever been as well. But you've got to be careful against this guy. You know, you can't just rush in, because he's going to throw with you. And we saw that. Tyson Fury tried to throw a big right hand. The guy, you know, he takes risks. He rolls the dice. He threw a left hook. Caught Fury on the side of the head. He went down, and you know, like I said, I felt that he could have got the decision in that fight. Mm-hmm. So Ngannou's no mug, but you've just got to be what you are, which is fast and dangerous. And I think, you know, he spent such a huge amount of his career being that perfect role model for British boxing and ambassador, and he still is. You know, he's a tremendous guy, but it's just all business now for him. You know, he's got a dream still to become undisputed champion. One of the reasons we're taking this fight is, you know, His Excellency, who's running boxing in Saudi Arabia, said that the winner of this fight will be in line to fight the winner of Fury Usyk. So there's everything on the line for AJ in this fight. And if he can do a good job, and hopefully Tyson Fury can beat Alexander Usyk, I really believe you're going to see that fight.
Eddie Hearn speaking to TalkSport a little earlier on this week about his apprehensions about the fight, but obviously ultra confident that Anthony Joshua comes through, and obviously that confidence, no doubt, has been born out of Anthony's last performance against Otto Wallin, where he looked fantastic, obviously teaming up with Ben Davison. Good game plan there, and he went out there and implemented that game plan sensationally well. And as Eddie alluded to in that conversation, there's a bit more data now on Francis Ngannou. Yes, he did surprise us all. He did look like he knew boxing compared to MMA striking going into the fight with Tyson Fury. I stand by that Tyson Fury was not the best version of Tyson Fury going into that fight. Did we get the best version of Francis Ngannou? I don't know. Maybe that version's going to get even better coming into the fight with Anthony Joshua. You know Josh really, really well. Where's your head at right now coming into this fight on Friday night?
My head with Anthony Joshua right now is as good as it's been for a long, long time, because I think that he now believes in his own self-ability again. And I think that was majorly important for Anthony Joshua. And what was missing from him in his performances from the Alexander Usyk loss, you saw him going in against Franklin, and Joshua was trying to find the right trainer. It was like a missing piece of the jigsaw for him. And I think because he couldn't find that right trainer, I think that, you know, that was affecting his own confidence, his own self-belief. And we think that was coming out in his performances. You know, when he was throwing his shots, he was holding his feet. He was not stepping in. You know, he was being too cautious, thinking, overthinking too much. You know, Joshua's one of those guys that's got to act instantly, you know, when he's doing his stuff. Like, he can't overthink stuff because that causes problems, you know. And I think with Joshua, it was all about the aggression, educated pressure, but that explosive power that we needed to see. And I think that's back now. I think that's what we saw from Wallin. You know, he was stepping in with his shots. He wasn't throwing single punches and one-twos and sort of leaning away as he was throwing the right hand. He was putting combinations together. It was phase one, then going again, phase two, you know, stepping up his attacks again. And I think that's what we needed to see, the old Anthony Joshua. And we got that against Otto Wallin. And now he has to carry it in the ring against Francis Ngannou. But here's the problem, Catman.
Go on.
Here's the problem against Ngannou. What we saw from Ngannou was that he has a good boxing IQ. What he worked out with Fury was trying to throw the feints. He was throwing the little shots. And what he was doing was, as Eddie Hearn alluded to there, he threw punches when Fury threw punches. Because before the fight, we'd seen brief clips of Ngannou, and you said, you know what? He looks strong. He is what he is, but he does look raw. He does look slow. And I think that's going to be his big undoing. And we expected Fury to walk through him. But what we found out from Ngannou actually is that what he lacks in speed, he makes up for in timing. Mm. And that is the thing. And he has no fear factor. You know, he's willing to sit in the pocket. And that makes him dangerous. Because when Joshua delivers, when he holds his feet and lets those shots go, Ngannou will punch with him as well. And as we've seen with Ngannou's power, if he lands, anything can happen. That's what makes this fight exciting.
Where would this go on the shock factor? In the build-up to Fury Ngannou, it was being billed as the biggest shock in boxing history if Ngannou was to pull it off. In fact, people were going further than that, saying it would be the biggest shock in the whole of sports if Ngannou was to pull this off. Where would it be if Ngannou was to beat Anthony Joshua next Friday?
Right, so I think with the boxing people, the boxing fraternity, the experts, and the people that really know the sport, it would be a shock if Ngannou pulls it off, because now we know, and it was that unknown before, and now we know. You think that Anthony Joshua, with the experience, he will adapt, he will be more cautious, he'll take his time, and he'll slowly look to break Ngannou down. That's the way that you see it with the boxing people. With the casual fan and the people that you speak to outside of the sport of boxing, people that just dip their toe in and out of it, a lot of people fancy Ngannou to win the fight. Like, it would not be a big shock to a lot of people, especially going off the back of the performance against Tyson Fury. So it's just an interesting one, man. It really is. I think that Ngannou comes with a lot more credibility than he got before he boxed Tyson Fury. I think that's where we're at with it. Yeah, it's a good fight, man. I'm excited for it. But I'm also, my relationship with Anthony Joshua, known him for a long time, you know, since he started boxing. So there is a personal relationship there with him. So obviously, my feelings are slightly different. And, you know, I'm sort of like, I'm a big fan of Anthony Joshua. I've always supported him through the good times, bad times, continue to support him, always believed in him. But I'm nervous about this fight because of what Ngannou brings to the table. Mm. You know, he's a switch hitter, but he don't care. He will stand there and let shots go. He's got that thick neck and that big head, and like, he takes shots well.
Listen, you know that obviously I cover the UFC. This is a man that fights in 4 ounce gloves against big lads that are good strikers. Nobody's knocked him out. Nobody stopped Francis Ngannou in 4 ounce gloves. So now going into the world of boxing with bigger, fatter gloves, different rule sets, he's a very, very tough dude. It's going to take something very, very special to stop him. What have you made, and has your opinion changed in the last 6 months? Because that's all we've had so far with Saudi Arabian involvement in boxing, right? It's all started in October when we got Fury and Ngannou, and now we find ourselves in this situation. Has your opinion changed on everything that is happening? What do you think of Saudi Arabian involvement, especially in heavyweight boxing, and where this is going? Good, bad, Indifferent where you are.
Listen, I think it's good. And the reason I say it's good is because we are, you know, what's happening in Saudi Arabia is that we're now getting the fights that we've longed for a long time. You know, with these heavyweights and looking for undisputed, etc. The politics of the sport have always kept these fights from happening. Mm. You know, different broadcasters, pay-per-view splits, who gets 60%, who gets 40%, and you sort of like kept these fighters apart for that reason and that reason only. Now, with the involvement of Saudi Arabia, the investment of Saudi Arabia, we are getting, so as a fight fan, I think it's great for the sport because we are now getting the fights we've longed to see. Obviously, for the people that want to go there and they want to see these undisputed fights and they want to see Joshua versus Fury and they want to see it at Wembley. Yeah, no, I know that's frustrating for the fans, but that is a small minority of the of the mass, if that makes sense. So what I'm saying is I would rather see the fight happening in Saudi Arabia and paying for it on pay-per-view, but we're getting the undisputed fights. You know what I mean? Look, we've waited since 1999 for an undisputed world heavyweight title fight. When you're talking, you know, when you go way back, Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis. I mean, that's how often they come around. We are now getting it again. And the only reason we're getting this is because of the investment of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I mean, where are you at with it?
My attitude's changing, I'm going to be honest. And I think anybody that listens to me on TalkSport or any platform that I'm on, you'll know that I'm ultra cynical. And that cynicism is absolutely born out of being sold certain things over the years, them not materialising, and then becoming twice shy. The amount of times that we've been told that we're getting certain fights in the heavyweight division and they're not happening from various promoters over the years obviously makes you a little bit apprehensive when something new and fresh and shiny and glitzy and glamour comes along and everybody tells you, this is the game has changed and we're going in this direction. One thing that I've concluded over the last 6 months is that everything that I think we all once upon a time knew about boxing and its politics kind of no longer exists because of what you've just said. The amount of money that is involved kind of eradicates all that politics. Turki Alşek has come in to the sport and he seems to be an incredible boxing fan, first and foremost. I saw a great interview that he did with Ade Oladipo, one of our colleagues, and he was speaking extensively about the history of boxing and his love of boxing. So that obviously gets you excited because he's not here for the crossover, what I would class as circus events. This is a guy that is serious about his boxing. So when you take a step back and analyse what has actually happened over the last 6 months, and this is all coupled with everything externally as well, I had an idea of how to make boxing great. And I'm sure there's plenty of boxing fans that had that idea as well. Make the best fights. Put the best guys in with the best guys, and then the fans will come. What I think Turki Alşek has done, and I think he has that in the back of his mind, what I think he's done is make the best events in order to attract the casual fan first. Because my attitude was, get the hardcore fans on board, get them singing from the hymn sheet, they'll sell it to the casual fan. Turki Alşek's coming at it from the other way around. And analysing it over 6 months, he's right. And the reason why he's right is this. I'm sure a lot of you have gone on Netflix this week and watched the documentary of Battle of the Baddest. Sensational. Hollywood blockbuster stuff. You've all seen the promos that are going around the world at the moment. Viral content. The casual audience, as Spence alluded to 2 minutes ago, is talking about boxing.
Mm-hmm.
They might not know about Anthony Joshua. They might not know about Francis Ngannou. They might not know about Tyson Fury or anybody else that's involved in any of these fights. But they are talking about it because of these pieces of content, these promos, these documentaries. Their interest, the thirst is there now to see these type of events. So what he has done, he's attracted the casual audience. Come and look at us. Come and look at what we're doing. Now, okay, there might have been a tiny little bit of luck in there as well with Francis Ngannou delivering what he delivers in the fight with Tyson Fury and putting Tyson Fury on his backside, because that adds to the Hollywood-esque guy off the street, out of a different sport, coming into boxing and doing something that nobody believed he could do. It adds to the narrative. We now find ourselves going towards a fight on Friday. Anthony Joshua, former two-time unified heavyweight champion, Olympic gold medalist, taking on Francis Ngannou, a guy that, yes, on paper is 0-1 in the world of boxing, but he did that. He did that in the Netflix thing that I've watched 2 minutes ago. So everybody from the casual side of this sporting realm is going to be watching on Friday. They're going to be locked into it. Now, again, going back to Turki Alşek and his involvement, what we all want as hardcore boxing fans, I want you to give me undisputed, mate. I want you to give me undisputed. What he is going to do in May and in June is deliver two fights that we want. So the audience is there. The casual audience has come along because of promos, Netflix,
yep.
The story, the sell of the guy coming out of the sand mines from Cameroon to now fighting the heavyweight champions of the world. And then all of a sudden he's going to say, right, you're all watching now. Now you're all watching. Here's the best two heavyweights on the planet. They're fighting.
Yep.
And once that's done, here's the best two light heavyweights on the planet. They're fighting. Where this could go could be unbelievable for boxing. It could be absolutely unbelievable. And that's the game change. Because I saw it coming from the other way.
Yeah.
I said, let's do hardcore first, then casual. They've gone casual first, then coming back to hardcore. And that's where the genius is.
And let's not forget the undercards as well. It's not just about this main event. I mean, this is for the hardcore boxing fan now. This is for the purist. You know, when you're talking about Nick Ball versus Ray Vargas.
Outstanding.
Great fight. Joseph Parker versus Zhele Zhang. Great fight. I mean, that is for your purist. That is for the boxing, you know, fans, not just the casual. So there's a mixture of everything in there. How can that not be good for the sport of boxing? So Turki Alshaikh and Saudi Arabia, what they are doing for the sport is turning it around. And you're right in what you say, Catman. You know, when you think about it and you process it, you go, I didn't see that coming, but we got it.
The exciting thing, just to finish on this, I've been complaining about belts, ranking systems, sanctioning bodies, all these things for many, many years. The way that this could go is that we might get one champion per division, one single, one song in the division. That's what we want. We want clarity in all those things. Best guys fighting the best guys. Mate, where this could go from the narrative that we've seen in 6 months is very, very exciting. To continue the heavyweight chat, we got a heavyweight in on the conversation. War Chisora was out and about in London, so we gave him a call and got him on the show. Do you know something, man? I can't actually listen to this song without thinking about Derek.
You can't.
It's his tune, man.
It was such an emotional ring walk, mate. I love it.
It's a class ring walk. I love fighters that have the same tune for their coming out. Oh, mate.
But it just gets you, doesn't it? It gets the hairs up on the back of the neck and, like, you know what? What a servant to the sport Derek Chisora has been. The fights that this guy has been in has been absolutely insane. What a man.
And, as if by magic, he very kindly has given up a little bit of time on a Saturday night to come and join us. You're listening to Fight Night on TalkSport. I'm Adam Catterall, Spencer Oliver alongside me. And here he is, the one and only War himself, Mr. Derek Chisora. Derek, how are you, mate? You well?
I'm all right, man. How are you guys? You all right?
All good, Del Boy.
Very well indeed, mate. Very well indeed.
First of all, let me say this here before we start talking about boxing.
Okay.
Whoever made that Fight Night sport poster, he did it the wrong way because he made Spencer look like he's 6'6". And that's the wrong.
Derek, let me have my moment, my man. Let me have my moment.
Derek, I think it was Spencer was involved in the creative process there. You made that, didn't you, Spencer?
Well, listen, look, I've spent a lifetime being very, very small. So just let me have that moment.
Fair enough. Derek, want to get your thoughts on next Friday, mate. Of course, Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou are going to be meeting in Saudi Arabia. What do you make of that fight?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I said to some fighters this morning and when I was training, I said, this is AJ's hottest fight of all his fights.
Right.
For the simple reason, it's the unknown. He's only got 10 rounds with Tyson Fury. The rest in MMA have been this rough fighting, you know, uppercuts, you know, all that craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that as well, that it's so much pressure on AJ that he's representing boxing, he's representing all of us right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for himself, you know, for his own, for his name, for his dignity. So it comes with so much pressure now when you're fighting somebody you don't know, who's not a great fighter. Because remember, he's only got 10 rounds with Tyson Fury.
Mm.
And on one of the rounds, he dropped Tyson Fury. So it's the unknown, and this will be his hardest fight ever.
Hey, Del Boy, here's one for you, right? So this is what you're all about, right? So you're a guy that goes in there, you've got no fear at all. You'll go in there and you'll take the fight to someone, right? And that is dangerous alone. But what you done, Derek, or what you do, is that you'll throw punches when your opponent's throwing. You deliver the shots and you've had some good results out of that. And what we found from Francis Ngannou was that he's that guy. He's big, he's strong, he's very physical, but he will throw. His timing actually is very good. His boxing IQ is actually very good. That's what we found out. But he will throw punches when his opponent throws. And that makes it a difficult night for Joshua, right?
Makes it a difficult night for Joshua. Remember this, yeah? Francis don't have any bad habits because he's only been boxing for a year and a half. Do you understand? Mm. So, you know when you're a professional, you got bad habits. Mm. You know, when you're an amateur, when you're beginning, you're understanding how to chuck the jab and bringing the jab back to your cheek and then chucking the 1-2 and then moving out of the way. But when you understand the game more, you forget though you got so many bad habits happening. So it's gonna be. Listen, I'm telling you now, it's gonna be a hard fight for him. But I can guarantee you this: yeah, it's gonna be a knock. He's gonna knock him out.
Do you take that confidence from the performance that you saw against Wallin last time out, Derek?
No, because remember, you know, I've gave Francis Ngannou a nickname. You know, I'm like, this guy, he is the Superman of Africa, you understand? Because everything else has gone through and he's come out on the other side, you know, in the you know, in rainbows and shine and sunshine, you understand? So this is why I gave him that nickname, Superman of Africa. You know, watching Wallin and Francis are totally different people, you understand? Mm. One is a true specimen of a real man, you understand? If you had to go to war, if they tell you pick Ngannou or Wallin, who are you going to pick? We know exactly who you're going to pick. So yeah. Let's be honest with you. We know exactly which place Oliver's going to be picking. So, Wallin was okay, you know. And then AJ had to go through him because, you know, it was a warm-up fight for this. So now he's in it now. But he's going to come out victorious.
Do you think AJ now, from what the performance we saw against Otto Wallin, but knowing him personally, like I know him personally, and I've said that I feel that AJ is back to his best physically and mentally, do you feel that way as well? Do you feel that like AJ at the moment has reinstalled that confidence that may have been a little bit low, you know, trying to find the right trainer, etc.? I just feel that AJ is in a good place right now, and that makes him dangerous and makes him one of the best heavyweights in the world again right now. What's your thoughts on that?
Listen, you know, credit to Ben Davis, you know, because Ben Davis actually, you know, the way he works from people that he likes to explain, you know, and then you'll be like, to AJ, why you on that corner? Why you chucking that show? Give me the reason why. And that's how AJ likes to train. Mm-hmm. So far, from what I've heard, he's gone well. His confidence is back. He's back up since the last fight in Saudi, but now it's back up again more. You know, and I spoke to him this afternoon, and he looked so great after he's finished training. And I told him I'd be touching down there soon.
When they were billing the Fury-Ngannou fight, it was being cast as it could be the biggest boxing upset of all time. Some people were saying it could be the biggest sporting upset of all time. Where would this rank next Friday if Ngannou's to be victorious, Derek?
Mate, I'll be honest with you, there'll be memes. You know, people will be taking the mick out of AJ. There'll be memes. And he knows that. So he's going to go in there, bite that gumshoe, and go hard. You know, I'm not even thinking about him losing. I'm just thinking about him knocking this guy out. Mm.
Have you shared a ring with Ngannou, Derek, at all? Have you sparred him at all?
No, I know guys who sparred him. And then, I had a guy who sparred him before the Tyson Fury. And they go, listen. He's boxing like an amateur. And then before the fight, I gave my prediction. Like I said, listen, Tyson's going to knock down. And then afterwards, going to win the fight. And everybody looked at me like I was talking crap, you know. But who knows? But this is boxing, though.
Can I just get your thoughts on the Fury-Usyk fight? Obviously, it's rescheduled off the back of last week. It was supposed to be last week. Now we're getting it in May. Obviously, it's getting a lot of traction. Lots of fight fans are talking about it. Lots of people are excited about it. You've been there, done it, and got the T-shirt. How do you see that one playing out between Fury and Usyk?
Can I be honest with you?
Please.
I personally, this is my prediction. Yeah, would I even say anything? Yeah, I see Usyk winning the fight. Yeah, because Usyk now is going to be targeting that same spot, because that's not going to be here. That's not going to be held properly, you know. So he's going to be hitting that same jab but the same spot where the cut is. And by end of the 9 or 10, I think the ref will stop the fight on Usyk's favor because of the cut eye.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. That eye worries me as well, Derek. I've said that soft tissue. Like, listen, we've been around and in the game for a long time. You've had them cuts. I've had those cuts. We know how long it takes to heal. It's not the healing process up until May the 18th. It's the training he's got to do in between that as well.
Yes.
That is the big concern. Derek, just quickly as well, mate, before you go, I wanted to ask you where you're at. When are we going to see you back in the ring? Are we going to see you back in the ring?
I'll tell you where I am right now. I'm outside 22 in my smart car. You know,
when are we going to see you back in the ring, mate?
Soon. Soon come.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you got anything in the pipeline? Are you going to give us any exclusives?
So far, working on certain things. They're coming. Don't worry. I'm coming home soon.
Derek, just obviously, there's yourself, Tyson, AJ. Obviously, we could put Wilder in there and Parker. All these types of characters, and there's a lot of characters at the moment in the heavyweight division. But they're not going to last forever. Don't take that as a bad thing. It's not going to last forever.
So enjoy the characters we have right now. Enjoy
exactly,
us.
Exactly that. But what I wanted to get
so
your
you want to tell your friend Simon Jordan to stop talking crap about other fighters, you know, so that way everybody can tune in and watch everybody fight. Do you understand? So this is what I'm trying to say. Enjoy us.
Well, just on that, and we will. Well, I want your expert opinion on who you think is going to be the next big star in the heavyweight division. Have you seen somebody that you think to yourself, yeah, in 5 years, they're going to be the thing?
Do you know what? Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. To be a big star in the game, you have to have character. And right now, I don't see anybody with character in their heavyweight game run. As young fighters were coming up, there's no one with a character. There's no one I want to buy my 500-pound ticket and go see ringside and watch him fight. You understand? As you said, me, Tyson, Dylan, you know, AJ, we got character. Do you understand? Everybody's got their own character in their own ways. But half of these young athletes are coming up right now. They can't really speak on the microphone. They don't know what to do. They don't know what's right or wrong. So who knows, man? But they're good fighters. But is it a fight you want to say, you know what? Am I going to spend that money to watch this guy? Because, you know, you understand?
Yeah.
But who knows? But right now, I can guarantee you that I think the next big thing in the United Kingdom will be Daniel Dubois.
Ooh, good shout.
Wow.
There you go.
Big shout. Well done, Del.
Listen, looking forward to your thoughts throughout the course of the week as we build up towards AJ and Ngannou. Enjoy your evening. Derek, thank you very much for giving up a bit of time. Take care.
Sorry, fellas. Who am I sending the bill to?
Ed, our producer. Send it to him.
I know where Spencer lives, so Spencer, I'm coming to get my money.
Yeah. All right, Derek, just quickly before you go, mate. Are you out? He's gone. I was trying to butter him up then. You know him.
He's back.
Oh, he's back.
Gone. Has he gone? Is he still there? Has he gone? Is Derek gone?
Hold on, look, if I tell him
he's gone. Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone. Shame.
He's going around to your house, mate, to get the door.
I know, mate. Listen, I know that little black smart car as well, mate. Don't worry about that. That same smart car has been circling around this building a number of the times looking for Simon Jordan. Don't worry.
I'm sure boxing aficionados know full well that Pat McCormack has got a twin brother called Luke McCormack, who hasn't made his professional debut as of yet. Well, he was on the show at the weekend to explain why it's taken him so long to turn over, but now that he has a date and a promoter ready to take him to the moon. We've been waiting, obviously. We saw the amateur rise. We saw, obviously, that coming out with the trip to Tokyo, and we've been waiting for the moment of obviously you stepping into a professional ring. Have you found the last few years incredibly frustrating, waiting to to get the all go for the start of this professional career?
Yeah, it's been a frustrating time for me, to be honest. Waiting a long time. I think it's 2 years now I've been out the ring and just been really dark place, not being able to fight, not being able to earn no money. It's been really frustrating for us, to be honest.
Luke, tell us the reasons why you was out, mate. Why was out and what the wait was for?
It was a ADHD medication before the Olympics. I took the ADHD medication for about 3 weeks and then I stopped taking it because it made us depressed. And now I've come to do my brain scan. I've had to wait so long to get retested. So it's just been a frustrating time.
Yeah, listen.
I missed out on a load of money. I missed out on a load of fights. And it's just been a really frustrating time, to be honest.
So when you get the all clear, mate, that must be an unbelievable relief. And now you're chomping at the bit, ready to get going.
Well, I had the weight of the world on my shoulders, to be honest with you. Really, really delighted to get a door signed and seen.
I mean, Luke, tell us, you know, how tough that was, those dark times, you know, when you was going through that stage, mate, just for our listeners. Just tell us how tough that was to overcome that and get through that.
Well, it was a little bit tougher with my twin brother getting out there, getting signed on Matchroom, getting all the hype. And it was like I was just sitting on the sideline doing all the training camps, waiting to fight. I've done about 6 training camps now, so I'm more than ready to get in the ring, to be honest.
Right. Let's get to the positive stuff, because we've signed with Queensbury.
I don't want to sit here and complain, like, but...
No, man, no, listen, it's part of the story. It's all part of the story. Like I said, there's a lot of fight fans out there that have been chomping at the bit waiting for you to get out there and do your thing. And I'm sure a lot of them were aware of the situation and the frustrations, and I'm sure they're all delighted for you. But now it's all systems go. It's a lot more positive. Talk to me about Queensbury. Why have you chosen that route? Why are we going down that route, mate?
I just feel like Frank Warren's on the rise. I feel like with the Saudis... the Saudi deals and that he's got going on, I feel like it was a good choice for me. And I feel like I could be one of the big stars in Queensbury Promotions. I feel like I think I'm the first Olympian he's signed since Billy Joe Saunders, so hopefully they make a little bit of hype about us.
Absolutely, mate.
Yeah, listen. Also, Luke, you know, it's been one of those. Your brother signed up with Matchroom, you've gone with Frank Warren. Ben Davison has been saying some high praise about you. You know, he said that you are the wrecking ball. He said, where your brother's more technical, and yes, he's heavy-handed as well, you're sort of more rough, and that is more suited to the professional game. And with what he can implement into your style, he thinks you're the next superstar of British boxing. I mean, that's high praise coming from someone like Ben.
Well, he doesn't tell me that in the gym, to be honest with you. He doesn't tell me that in the gym.
Yeah, no, he can't tell you that,
he's
mate.
He's not supposed to tell him that.
No, that's for me to tell you. That's for me to tell you. But yeah, no, I was listening into some interviews that he'd done, and he gave you some high praise. I also watched you, you know, in your amateur career. I looked back on YouTube, looked at a couple of your fights, and yeah, mate, your style is so suited for the professional ranks, and you've got a lot of charisma about you as well. This is an exciting time.
Yeah, I'm more into the big shots than the point scoring style of fighting. I'm more into standing there and having a real fight rather than tippy-tappy boxing.
TV friendly, mate, is what it is. Talk to me about that gym, because it is stacked with talent. Obviously, you're in there with your twin brother. Lee's in there as well, who's been doing some fantastic things. I know that, obviously, Anthony Joshua's in there as well, working with Ben. Talk to me about that, working in and around that elite talent, mate. And I know that you've been out of competition, but I've no doubt you've got better in that period of time working around that talent.
Yeah, well, it was a time where I thought that year I could either go off the rails and, like, mess about, do other things, and like lose myself. But I thought it's a time where I can get strong, I can do a load of weights, I can focus on my training, and catch everyone by surprise, really.
Talk to me about your relationship with Ben, because we speak to him a lot. He's a very different type of trainer, very analytical, more he likes to get your input about why you're doing certain things. It seems to be working for your brother. Why is it working for you?
Well, Ben's more like, he's a trainer where he gets, you work off like what, thinking more than actually he's fighting, thinking what the other lad's doing, making him do certain things, making him throw certain punches. So it's good.
Listen, Luke, he also said that he wants to see you out at least 4 times this year. And he said that he doesn't want to hold you back either. He said he doesn't want to feed you. You know,
the lad needs to make a few quid, mate. Yeah, he's been waiting to make a few quid as the boy.
He's not looking for journeyman, mate. He's talking straight like in. He wants to get straight in. Woof. He thinks that you've got that ability. Is that what we're going to see?
Yeah, definitely. I don't really want to mess about fighting too many journeymen. I just want to get in there, get a proper fight and make a proper few quid.
Come on, mate.
So what I said a minute or two ago, March 22nd, your call. That's the start, yeah? Is that the date that you've been given?
Yeah, that's my start. Finally, mate. Buzzing with it.
Brilliant. Listen, I think we're going to see you out once a month, Luke, and I think that we can see you boxing for a British title. I'm going to say it now. Inside 10 fights, mate.
Yeah, well, that's the plan, definitely. 100%.
Luke, do you know something? It's great to see your smiling face, pal, because I know it's been frustrating over the last 2 to 3 years. Looking forward to seeing the start of this professional chaos, I think is the correct word, isn't it? Is that the right word that we're going to go with, Spence?
Listen, chaos.
It's going to be chaos from the start.
No more points scoring, mate. No more points.
Do you know what? Listen, Luke, chaos creates opportunity, my friends. Just stick with that. Chaos creates opportunity.
I've got a fan-friendly style. I think the fans are going to like it.
I think they are, mate. I really do. Luke, thanks for giving up a bit of time on Saturday night, mate. Enjoy the rest of this camp, and we look forward to seeing you do your thing on March 22nd, mate.
See you soon. Thank you, lads.
Best of luck, Luke.
Top man. There he is. Luke McCormack. I know that a lot of fight fans who tune into our show will be familiar with his twin brother, Pat, who's been doing his thing under the watchful eyes of Eddie Hearn. Like I said, when these two were coming through in the amateurs, obviously there was loads of conversation about the McCormack twins. Sensational talents. Obviously, Luke's gone through a bit of a traumatic time over the last couple of years because of medication and various things like that. He's managed to get that all clear. All I'll say is don't blink, because he's been like a caged animal, that lad. And he is ready to rock and roll.
Listen, it's going to be an exciting journey. It really is. Like his brother Pat as well. I mean, look, unbelievable talents. And I'm going to sort of predict it. I think they can both go on. This is how good I think they both are. I think they can both go on, and we're going to get twins that are both going to be world champions. There you go.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Joining us in the studio on Saturday night with her father, promoter extraordinaire Mick Hennessy, the one and only Francesca Hennessy. Came to see us. Brilliant to have you both in the studio. How are you both? Well,
pretty well, thank you. How are you guys?
Do you ever stop Brilliant. Smiling? You're always
no.
having a whale of a time.
That's the name, isn't it? It should be the Smiling Assassin.
Yeah,
I like that.
I think my dad would say different when he catches me on a bad day.
But in the public though. The public perception of you when they see you is like the Francesca's always smiling. Definitely. There's something there, you know. Let's think about that one.
Yeah, I think it could be a potential nickname, couldn't it?
We spoke to your dad recently about obviously moving out of the amateur game into the professional game. Has it been everything that you expected so far, three fights in?
Definitely. It's been so amazing. I absolutely love the pro game. I just love the style of it. I love the atmosphere of it, the ring walks, just all of it. I'm just really enjoying myself.
Francesca, I wanted to ask a question actually, because when I first met you, you're like sort of like a very shy, very innocent, like young lady, you know. And then when the camera goes on you, so the first time I saw you box on your debut at York Hall, I wasn't knowing what to expect. Now I'd seen you box obviously out in Sweden, weren't it, for the Golden Girl competition. You won Best Boxer of the Year and Best Boxer of the Tournament, actually, wasn't it? Yeah. I saw you out there, and the first time I went, wow, because Mick, when I didn't know you had a daughter that actually boxed, did I? It was all a bit of a, yeah, a bit of a mad one. I was out there, one of my mates' sons was boxing, so all of a sudden Francesca's out there. She stole the show, like Best Boxer Tournament. I'm like, wow, this girl can really, really fight. This was
just to put that in perspective, about 380 female fighters, is that right?
Yeah, I think the official thing was about 360, only 12. Yeah, round about.
I'm there and thereabouts.
Keep it 380.
380 fighters.
And probably across about 24 different countries, somewhere around that, more actually. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, come from around the globe. And so Francesca stole the show out there. How old was you then? About 16, I think you was or something.
I think I just turned 17.
Just turned 17.
Yeah, just turned
right.
17.
Goal 16.
So,
goal 16.
So I remember speaking to your dad and going, do you know what? I think she's really going to do something in this game. And I didn't realise you was going to turn pro as quick as you turn pro. Anyway, then we fast forward onto your debut. We go to the York Hall and I'm thinking, well, I don't know, like, she's a young lady. I don't know how she's going to handle this. There's been a lot of hype around her. Boxer and Sky have got behind her. And it's a big thing. Female boxing, female sport at the moment is on the rise. I'm thinking, how's little Fran going to come out here? Because she's like, you know, she's like, you don't know where it's going to go. Bang. The ring walk goes, the music that we've just heard, and she comes out doing these like dance moves, busting. Okay, all right. And then you go,
feeling
right,
yourself a little bit.
Absolutely.
I like it, yeah.
But you go from amateur boxing into professional boxing. Now, anyone that's not boxed won't know how different that is. It's two different sports totally. Like, I remember having my first pro fight, and it was just like going into something totally different from amateur boxing. So I'm thinking, right, now Fran's got to deal with this. She doesn't know what this is like because she's only been used to being in an amateur boxing ring. This is something totally different. Well, bang, nailed it. Went out there and delivered a top performance against a really tough girl as well, actually, but you absolutely nailed it. How good did you find that?
Oh, honestly, it was amazing. I've always, since growing up watching professional boxers, I've always looked and thought, when I turn pro, I want to make an impact. I don't just want to be known as going in there and having a fight. I want people to be excited for the whole performance, you know, the ring walk, the fight, and then, like, the after bit. I want them to be excited for the whole bit. So it was, like, the perfect debut for me. I couldn't have dreamed for it to be any better. The support was crazy as well, so it was just amazing.
It really was, and I was so nervous, you know, because I've been going around there bigging you up, telling everyone, Mick Werner, I'm going, you haven't seen this girl, Mick Ennis's daughter Francesca, she can fight. I mean, she's won this Golden Girl tournament, wait till you see her and all that. And I'm thinking, please don't freeze, she's 18 years of age, don't freeze on the big stage. And you delivered, you've done it. And I think that's what champions are made of. Champions feed off the pressure, and like, that's exactly what you've done, because you had so much pressure on your shoulders going into that fight. You know, your dad's been in the game forever, like I have as well. So we know what that pressure is all about when there's a lot of expectation surrounding that. And you dealt with it. Like, you come through with flying colours. I mean, that was fantastic.
Definitely. I think, look, the pressure was a privilege. I was so grateful to be able to have that pressure. And I think in this game, it's a make or break if you can't hack the pressure. You need to be able to hack the pressure. So I knew, even though I was so nervous, I knew I was going to handle the pressure exactly how I did with the ring walk and things. My brother was laughing because we was in the hotel before and I was so nervous. And then he said, I was not expecting you to dance out. So I think I actually love the pressure. It makes me perform better, I think.
Brilliant.
What's the conversation like about turning over? Because you could have an extensive amateur career. You could maybe go through cycles of going into Team GB and the Olympics and all this type of stuff. Obviously, you've been there, done it, and got the T-shirt, Mick. So was it a style thing? You looked at her style and thought to yourself, she could actually go a little bit earlier than what many would do?
That was a big part of it, Adam. That really was. But there was a few factors to it. And one of the factors was that, you know, for me, amateur boxing's in a real bad place.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you know, if there's not agendas or incompetence, you know, there's corruption.
Absolutely.
And I felt that you run the gauntlet with a real good fighter, especially, you know, with her background as well. You just run the gauntlet. And we see some, like, terrible, terrible things in the amateurs. And like you said, she had a real pro style. She was sparring pro since she was 15 and top-class pros and doing incredible. So we knew that the pro game suited her. She was already in the gym doing sort of like 8 and 10 rounds. So it was perfect for her. And if anything, the three-minute rounds, she was only getting going at the end of it. And we just knew that she was made for it. And I don't think we was going to get any favours either. Mm-hmm. I really don't think we was going to get any favours. She could have, in my honest opinion, and I think Spencer, like, because as I mentioned before, Spencer was one of the very first people round us that got it, actually got it. Mm-hmm. And for me, she could have gone out and, you know, represented England and got a gold medal at most of the major tournaments, including the Olympics, and done it in style because, you know, she's teak tough. Mm-hmm. Her timing, her spatial awareness is just second to none. She's very, very hard to hit. And if you can hit her, as I say, she's very tough. But on top of that, she's got brilliant boxing skills and she can punch with either hand. And her determination is through the roof.
And that's not a father's passion speaking there, because I was there and I did witness that. Like I say, like, I didn't know Francesca was boxing out. I didn't even know Mick had a daughter that boxed. We'd known each other for years and years, and all of a sudden Mick was there. And when I saw it, and then I saw the fights unfold, and I saw Francesca the way that she was boxing out there, I was like, it's a future superstar. It really is. And I think that the decision for you to turn pro so young was because of a really bad decision that you had, didn't you? Like, I remember... Yeah. Seeing it, I remember watching it, actually. I don't know if you sent me to fight, Mick. Or I think you sent me to fight.
I did.
And I remember watching it, and it was just like, the decision was outrageous. And you talk about bad decisions, and you talk about corruption.
Yeah.
That word corruption, that's where it was right there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, it was on a big platform in Ireland. It was against the current national champion, and we'd already heard that she'd been picked to go to the World Championships. And the thing about Fran is that she boxed for an English club and an Irish club. So, you know, she was eligible to box for either England or Ireland. Mm. So when she went and done what she did, and we got that on short notice, the call, because they couldn't get anyone to fight her in this final of this tournament. We took it on the Wednesday, landed out there on the Sunday, and it was probably the most one-sided fight I've ever seen. Mm. And it was like the paramedics got called into the ring twice, and... It was just, you know, she's beat the golden girl of Irish boxing, who's going out to the world. And then all of a sudden they called it a split decision and they went the other way. And on top of that, the actual, to be fair to the president of the Irish Boxing Association, he was there, came over, was shaking his head, said it was a terrible decision, apologised to us, didn't he? Sincerely apologised to us. And apparently he went to the desk where there was an IEBA representative. And they basically said he was looking for something to be done or overturned. Mm. And they said, go away, basically.
Right.
Wow. Mm. Yeah. That leaves a sour taste in the mouth, doesn't it? Because that I know that things are looking rosy now, but at the time, you know, they might be wrecking somebody's dream of going to the Olympics or wanting to have an extensive amateur career to go and win gold medals at World Championships.
Definitely. I think I was about 17 at the time, was I? And so boxing was just my everything. I honestly dedicated myself to it so much. I went out there, I was really up for it, you know, couldn't wait to get in there. And when I did what I did, I remember my brother was in the corner with me as well as my amateur coach at the time. And Michael looked over me and he said, you've done it, you've won, this is great. And then when they said the decision, honestly, like this thing just came over me and I just thought, I was just so gutted. And then I remember the night of the fight, when I was going to bed, I couldn't sleep till 5 a.m. I was just sickened with what I was dealing with, because it wasn't the first time I'd been robbed like that before. I'd had a couple times where things like that had happened. So for me, it was just like, as a young girl, it can really affect you. And
of course,
it's lucky I've got that determination, because that could have just called my boxing career off there.
And experience around you to say, listen, okay, that's an isolated, not isolated, because it does happen sadly in the amateurs quite a lot, as you were just alluding to, Mick, but listen, we can change this and we can go in a completely different direction, of which you are doing. So what we're going to do in a minute is start picking some fights for you in the professional game, all right?
She's got a go in here, and Bass is just showing some worrying signs, looking down and looking to the side, and Kira McCann's hovering because Francesca Hennessy is pouring it on here.
I'd love to get a title before the end of the year, definitely. That's on my radar. I don't just want to, you know, build my record, fight people that aren't really, you know, in there to fight. I want to fight people who are going to come at me and get a title in the way of doing that.
You listen to Fight Night on TalkSport. I'm Adam Cattrall. Spencer Oliver is alongside me. Fran and Mick Hennessy in the studio with us. Obviously, we're... all excited every single time Fran fights. It puts a massive smile on everybody's face, because she's got a massive smile on her face and looks like she's having a whale of a time. Now, We've spoken about this extensively, Spence, on the show in the past, that female fighters seem to move a little bit quicker than guys coming into the game at the start. As I look around in your weight division, obviously, you're causing a stir. You're 3-0. Obviously, you're with a platform that are supporting you, putting you on television, the profile's building. This is going to move relatively quick. Your dad's probably going to shoot me down in a minute or so, but I'm going to carry this going on. How quickly do you see this moving? Because I've no doubt that people stick microphones in your face and they say, what about this person? What about this person? Are you ready for this? Are you ready for that? You're never going to turn it down as a fighter, but realistically, where are you at? We're 3-0 right now. How quickly is this going to move for you, do you think?
I think it will definitely move pretty quickly, but as I say, you know, I'm still 19. I do need to still get a little bit more experience in the pros, a few more fights under my belts, but I do believe that I will be the youngest undisputed world champion. Mm. I do. The youngest at the minute was 23.
Yeah.
I'm only 19. I definitely believe I can do it by 22.
Over to Dad. Right, come on.
So, Adam, for me, I mean, obviously, names were mentioned, Ebony Bridges, Shannon Courtney. And if I'm being absolutely honest, because Fran's a very respectful girl and she's very polite, she would beat the pair of them now over 10 rounds. Nailed on. But what I want to do is I want to give her that experience over the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And when she does come to fight them, it will be on a massive, you know, it'll be a massive affair. And by then, she'll be ready to stop them, the pair of them.
Mate, you talk about experience and being able to handle the pressure,
yeah.
You know, for such a, you know, young lady. She's got a great head on her shoulders, you know. Like you say, she does well outside of boxing. She's got a good business brain on her and whatnot. But it's about handling pressure. Now, I want to rewind right back to the beginning again. When we talk about, you know, Francesca and when she was turning over and did a lot of publicity surrounding her, she's doing Sky Sports News, going on all these different outlets, come and talk sport, et cetera, et cetera. And there's like this big noise around her, which creates a lot of pressure. I believe that Sky TV even wanted to put her on live, didn't they, on her first fight, because there was such a big noise around her. And they were just thinking, yeah, but because she was so young, I think Ed Robinson, who's there, head of Sky there, actually asked your permission if she could go on, if she could handle it, if it would affect her performance. Is that right in what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, the head of sport, Ed, is a real fight man, and he understands the game inside out. And he put a very kind, caring and considerate call into me and basically said, we want to go live with Fran. We want to really make a big deal of it. I just want to take your advice on it. Is it too much pressure for her 18?
Mm.
And I said to Ed, she thrives on pressure. She will love this. But let me speak to her. Let me just speak to her anyway and I'll come back to you. And I spoke to Fran, big beaming smile. And she was like, you know, just watch me go now.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Activity, because this is, I like that it's averaging every 3 months. We're seeing you out, you're doing your thing. Is that the immediate plan? Let's keep that ball rolling. Every 8 to 12 weeks, we want to see you in the ring.
Definitely. I need that experience. I've only had about 18 amateur fights. I do need that experience. It's going to play a big part in my career. So, yeah, whenever I can get out, I'll be out. I'm always in the gym. I'm always training. I'm very serious about this sport, so yeah, I'd love to be active whenever they give me the fights.
So with that in mind, if my maths is any good, right? So if we're on three, we keep going at a rate of 8 to 12 weeks. This time next year, what you've just said, Mick, about the Ebony Bridges of this world, the Shannon Courtney's of this world, they then become realistic conversations at 20 and a half years of age.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Robert Smith about fighting for the British title because there was an age restriction for male fighters, and he said she could fight for it at 20. So, the end of this year, you know, we'll be looking for the British title, and you know, if either of them two want to fight for it, you know,
could you visualize this? Could you visualize this happening as quick as it has actually happened? You know, when we were, and I keep talking about Sweden, the first time that I'd actually met you and seen you box in the ring, which was like, what was it, just, I don't know, 18 months ago, whatever it was. Could you visualize, like, fast forward 18 months, and this is the position you'd be in right now?
I did and I didn't. Like, it's...
Because it's happened so fast, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like, it's just sort of, you know, I understand it as well, like for being an ex-fighter. So I understand you just go blinkers on. I know where my aim is. I know where I'm at now. And I know where the end goal is. And I know what I want to do. And I will go wherever I need to go. But it happens so fast, don't it? And it's like all of a sudden you just got to deal with everything, get on with it. But you know, you seem to be doing it so well.
Definitely. You know, it's sometimes I do have to take a step back and think, wow, this is like crazy. How much this is
pinch yourself a little bit.
Yeah, like it's only yesterday that I think like I was preparing for my debut and now I'm 3-0. It's just crazy how fast it's moved. And yeah, but it's just a whirlwind. I did think this would happen, but it is just a dream come true at the same time. I've been dreaming of being a pro since I've been a young girl. Like, the dream for me was always to be a world champion in the pro game and things like that. It was never really the amateur route for me. So, because I always knew I had that pro style, that little like Mayweather kind of thing. But
love
yeah,
that.
So I've always dreamed of this.
And now you're living the dream.
Absolutely.
Yeah, living the dream. I'm
brilliant.
Social media is a wonderful tool. I spotted that you were out in Marbella recently with a host of other fighters as well. I saw that Sam Knox was out there. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Sky Nicholson was out there too.
Yeah.
Did you have a little bit of a move around with Sky, or was it just purely S&C and working? What was the trip?
It was just purely like S&C and working. It was so it was me, Sam Noakes, Henry Turner, Sky Nicholson, and Maisie Rose Courtney. So it was
some good company to keep there.
Oh yeah, it was amazing. Honestly, just great people. They really, really looked after me out there. Took me in. I was actually out there with my brother and his friends. And it was just the quick.
Well, they were on a lads trip, were they?
Yeah. So it was just after my fight and my brother said to me, oh, come on holiday with me because you're never going to be able to go on holiday otherwise. I hadn't been on holiday for about 3 years before this. So he was like, come with me. And it was just a coincidence that they was all out there.
So you ended up going to work whilst you were on holiday?
Yeah. So I ended up meeting all of them and I didn't even really see my brother for half the trip, to be honest. But honestly, it was one of the best times I've had. It was just amazing. And just great company, great people, and we just all had a laugh, and yeah, I had such an amazing time.
Listen, I'm going to come back to you in a minute. I'm just going to pick your dad's brains as well on a couple of other fighters that you're representing. You know them, a fan of Aaron McKenna. I've seen this tournament in Japan that has been touted around for a bit. It looks absolutely crackers. What an opportunity for him, because every time I see him fight, he gets me on the edge of my seat and gets me excited. Out there, what an opportunity to win a ton of cash, and two, make a massive name for himself against some elite guys in his division.
Yeah, definitely, Adam. And I'm glad you obviously know your stuff to be behind Aaron McKenna, because I feel like he gets overlooked a little bit. And, you know, this is a young lad who was a world amateur champion. You know, he won European titles coming through the ranks as a junior and a youth and stuff like that. And he's got an incredible record. He's done it the hard way. He's gone out to, he's trained at Freddie Roach's gym, Robert Garcia's gym. He's sparred with, you know, the Victor Ortizes and every great fighter you can think of. And he's really done it the hard way. And this tournament couldn't come at a better time, because I looked at the tournament, looked at the lineup, and I thought Aaron McKenna's going to win this tournament.
Mick, tell us about the tournament, because you know, a lot of people recognise
March 31st, by the way, for fans listening to this. March 31st in Japan is when it's happening.
And people recognise the old prize fighter format that we used to have over here. And you had a quarterfinal, semi-final and a final, all done in one day. 3 minutes, three rounds.
Yep.
And the victor come out. So you had eight fighters and one come out victorious. Tell us about this tournament, because it's slightly different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a similar format. It's completely different. Although it's named Prize Fighter, it's completely different. It's more similar to like your Super Sixes and stuff. It's, you know, obviously quarter semis and finals, but that's going to be over like a 6 to 8 month period. Quarters, as Adam said, 31st of March.
10 three-minute rounds each fight?
And exactly, yeah, they're 10 three-minute rounds. And the titles aren't important. It's the fights that are important over 10 threes. And, you know, semis in the summer and finals in the autumn. And all of them in Japan.
Wow. Mate, unbelievable.
Wow.
I want to put your brains on Savvy, if that's okay, because I keep seeing her in Tom Aspinall's gym as she's doing her thing. Honestly, the way that... I don't want to give too much away, right? But I have been on the inside of this.
You can't start it.
I've been on the inside watching it. Mate, she looks good as an MMA fighter. It's mad how well she's transitioning into the world of MMA. I know that she was out in Saudi Arabia last week, keeping an eye on what Clarissa Shields doing, who's also making that transition. Where's her head at? When are we anticipating maybe seeing her in that smart cage?
Very soon. We're looking at right now, we're looking at June 8th in England.
Wow.
Wait, Mick, are we going to get Savannah Marshall, Clarissa Shields?
That's where they're going, mate.
In the case. Is that what we're going to get?
Definitely, that will happen at some point in 2025.
Look at that.
Mate, honestly, I've watched her in the gym. Yeah. It's crazy how well she's taken to it.
Mm.
Really crazy. Obviously, in 4 ounce gloves, they're hitting people's crackers in itself. But watching her roll and do jiu-jitsu with the Aspinall makes crackers.
Honestly, people talking about this crossover when we had Ngannou coming into the boxing world and people saying it was such a joke, and then we got the fight that we got and the spectacle that we got and how well Ngannou done. Now we're getting boxers crossing over into the cage as well, into the MMA, etc. I mean, I think this is great. I mean, it's brilliant entertainment for one. You're getting stars coming over from either side. I just think it's great entertainment.
Definitely. And what Adam said reflects how we're all feeling. We're so excited about Savannah in the cage. She is, as you can see, like she's a built athlete, and she's made for that game. And she's very physically strong, and she's got long legs for the kicking and everything. And as Adam said, she's took to it, you know, like incredibly. Like, we're so excited. I mean, if Clarissa versus Savannah is always in the boxing ring is always going to be a close affair. It's going to be who had the better camp. Who rises to the occasion better on the night. But I honestly believe in the cage that Savannah will do a job on.
Wow, man.
Really?
Honestly.
Can't wait.
She's fully immersed herself. I can't let you go without picking both your brains. Next Friday, obviously, we're going to be here all over the AJ and Ngannou crossover type fight. How are you seeing this playing out, Fran?
I think it's going to be a great fight, to be honest. I was very impressed with AJ's last performance. I thought he made a lot of improvements, and I thought he looked really, really good in his last performance. So I think if he can outbox Ngannou and keeps away from that big backhand, I think he'll definitely get the win. But obviously, it is just Ngannou's power he carries is just unnatural. So it will be. I think it's going to be a great fight. But I imagine towards more AJ, to be honest.
I agree with the being impressed with AJ last time out against Wall, and how much were you impressed with what Francis actually showed against Tyson when they met.
Incredible. Really, really incredible. His life, everything about him. I mean, I've recently just got back from Saudi and he was out there cage side, and the man's just got an incredible aura about him. He carries himself so, so well. You can't help but be impressed with him. And I just think that he's that smart that he not only got that incredible power, but he's smart the way he operates in the ring as well. And he's dangerous. I mean, I, for me right now, you know, this is a real dangerous fight that, you know, AJ could have probably, you know, done without, because he's got everything to lose and not much to...
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, from a boxing perspective. But I was, like Fran, I was really impressed with AJ last time out. I thought his performance was, the only way I could describe it was like smart brutality. And I thought he's come on a
just
lot.
Just 1 minute, I'm nicking that for next week. Smart brutality, that's a good one.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah, and he's got the benefit of hindsight now. He's had a look at...
bit of data.
Yeah, he's got the data, and I think AJ's going to come in, and I think AJ will win it, but I think Francis will give an incredible account of himself.
I'm going to put you both on the spot, because I've got to let him go. But I'm going to put you both on the spot. Turki Alshayk has told us we've got two semi-finals, right? So we've got AJ and Ngannou, we've got Fury Usyk, and they're going to meet each other. Give me one name who comes out on top of all that.
One name who comes out.
Who's going to... Two semi-finals, who's going to be the last man standing?
I believe Alexander Usyk. I just think he's just at the next level. I just love his style. I just think he's so smart in the ring. And, I just think he's one of a kind, to be honest. So I believe it'll be on Alexander Usyk.
And Mick?
Same, Alexander Usyk.
Wow. Yeah. There you go.
I think for big heavyweights, modern day heavyweights, I think a lot of the time for a lot of the big heavyweights, their kryptonite is
lateral movement,
very, very quick cruiserweights who've come up, who've got that athleticism, and also on top of that, he's southpaw and he's a real chess player, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Usyk.
Can't wait. Listen, it's so good. So good. You obviously have just come back from Saudi Arabia. What they're doing out there is absolutely crazy, isn't it? And long may it continue that we get in there the best of the best. Listen, young lady, I'm looking forward. Do you have a date in mind of when we might see you next in the ring?
I'm hoping around April time. So around hopefully around then.
Around April time. Just a quick one, just to send you on your way, because we had Ellie Scottney in the show last week. We got you this week, and someone sent us this text. Ellie Scottney last week, Francesca Hennessy this week. Great insight, attitudes, bringing attention to the women's game. What a wonderful woman Fran is. And the new. That's how they've signed it off. There you go, mate.
Yeah.
There you go. Here we go.
Nice. Nice. Listen, by the way, Richard Riakpor come in, and I think it was Andy Goldstein that give Richard Riakpor his boxing
the
name
midnight
as
trend.
The Midnight Train.
Correct. So what you
smiling
say
Smiling Assassin. I'm going Smiling Assassin, mate. Do you know what I mean?
Fran, if you're not announced as the Smiling Assassin next fight, he's going to be upset, mate.
Fran's not going to be happy with you. You're going to take his nickname from me as well.
We're going to have to ring. I'll ring Brad. I'll sort it out.
You deal with him.
Brad, mate, thank you so much for giving up a bit of time to come and join us on a Saturday night. It's been thoroughly pleasurable having you in the studio.
There you go.
Troublemaker. Let's turn our attention towards the world of MMA. Kind of apt, because I'm going to ask him about AJ and Ngannou and that crossover fight. First, though, let's take a look back at Saudi Arabia last week and what's coming up in Paris for the PFL with Dan Hardy. Let's have a look at some PFL stuff, because obviously on the show we do cover a lot of UFC and it does get a lot of love, but the PFL are making an awful amount of noise. Obviously recently we spoke about the buyout of Bellator, which is an incredibly positive move. And last week we saw the Night of Champions, where the PFL champions took on the Bellator champions. We all know the result there, where the Bellator guys came through with 5-1 victories. But as a night of a kind of a celebration of top-class MMA, you were out there, Dan, out in Saudi Arabia. Talk me through it, my man. Did it live up to the expectations that you originally had for it? Did it exceed the expectations? And it kind of sets us up nicely for what's coming this week in Paris, doesn't it?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't really know what to expect. Kind of like the Ngannou Fury event, you know, it was like, who knows what it's going to look like. But the setup was awesome. The fights were great as well. I honestly expected Bellator to have a successful night, because they've got such a deep talent pool that's been tested against itself over and over again. You know, the PFL league is a very different format, and there's a lot of new faces in there. But we did find a star with Henan Fajeda. I think we've proved that he's potentially one of the dangerous guys on the planet.
How big is he? About 6'8" or so?
6'8" he is. Massive.
Jeez. Have you seen this fella, Spence?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen this guy.
Henan Fajeda, a heavyweight, fought in the main event last weekend, and he took care of the champion from Bellator in the best part of 30 seconds, mate. He was absolutely sensational. And if it doesn't go well for Francis this week, that's who Francis will be fighting when he returns back to MMA.
It's interesting. Listen, Dan, I wanted to ask you about the crossover with the people coming out of MMA going into boxing and vice versa, boxing going into MMA, like Clarissa Shields that was boxing last week as well. She won that split decision. I mean, what's your thoughts on the crossover with the two sports combining?
I like it. I mean, you know, for me, we're all prize fighters, right? We go where the money is to be made. And unfortunately for MMA fighters, a lot of the money to be made is in boxing. So, you know, you see what Francis Ngannou's been able to do crossing over. And I think he surprised a lot of people. We'll certainly see how he fares against Anthony Joshua. But the surprise element's gone this time around, hasn't it? I fully expect him to be able to hold his ground. But I think what we have seen, especially with Clarissa Shields, as you mentioned, crossing over from boxing to mixed martial arts, there's a lot more to learn. And it's not as simple as boxing just plugs straight into MMA. I mean, I think, you know, you'll probably agree with me if you watch that fight with Clarissa Shields. She was struggling to manage the range between them. You know, the 4 rounds changed things quite a lot. And with the risk of getting clinched and taken down, that changes things again. You know, we're going to have Savannah Marshall fighting in mixed martial arts soon as well. And it's going to be interesting to see how she fares. But honestly, a good way of telling how well they're going to do is if they enjoy the grappling or not. If they don't enjoy the grappling part of it, then they're not going to excel, because it can be quite unpleasant at the best of times. You have to enjoy what you're doing. And that's really where the advantage is. So any boxers crossing over, learn to love the grappling.
Yeah, I think the transition seems to be easier for the MMA stars going into the boxing as opposed to vice versa, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's just a bit, you know, like we don't take ourselves quite as seriously in the boxing ring because we're kind of foregoing a good portion of our skill set. Mm. You know, if we say, you know, there are eight weapons in Muay Thai, we're leaving six behind when we step into the boxing ring. And the other thing, you know, like if you're Conor McGregor and you're fighting Floyd Mayweather, it doesn't really matter what happens, because if I fought you in a real fight, I'm going to kick your leg off, I'm going to take you down, I'm going to choke you out. So, like, there's not the same kind of... I think MMA fighters don't feel like they're falling quite off a huge cliff like a boxer would if they crossed over into MMA and lost.
Looking... Before, I'm going to keep picking your brains about the fight that's happening on Friday, which we're covering on TalkSport, but the night before it in Paris, I want you to literally sell this like mad to Spence and get him all on board the Cedric Dumbe train, right? This is a fella, last time out, when he made his PFL debut, Spence, right? He walked to the smart cage carrying a mattress, right? A mattress,
yep,
for his opponent.
Go on, I mean.
And on it, in French, it basically read, "Good night." On the mattress. And how quick was it down? How quick did he take care of his opponent before he put the opponent on the mattress? It was pretty rapid, that debut, wasn't it?
It was 9 seconds.
There you go. 9 seconds, mate. Nailed him in 9 seconds and gave him the mattress.
Wow. Is that a record, by the way?
It is, absolutely, yes. Yeah. It's going to be a difficult one to beat as well. Dumbe is a very special athlete. I mean, I put him in a bracket of very, very few fighters that can reach that kind of level of stardom and generate that kind of atmosphere. Conor McGregor, Prince Nassim, you know, that's the kind of vibe that you're getting from this guy. He's a very good trash talker. He switches from English to French and back with no problem at all. Like, he's driving an ambulance around Paris right now promoting his fight on Thursday night with pictures of his opponent's face on it. He's a marketing genius, the way that he's able to sell tickets. Like, we went from 5,400 tickets in September. We've cleared 16,000 tickets coming up for this event on Thursday night in Paris. Mm. He's a very, very special fighter. 75-7 as a kickboxer, 2-time world champion, 5-0 undefeated as a mixed martial artist, and can generate hype like no one I've ever seen, aside from the potential, you know, potentially Conor McGregor. I'm excited to see what happens this week, but we've broken all kinds of records with Cedric Dumbe, and I expect us to do a lot more in the future as well.
Listen, before we let you go, come on, give us we've got to pick the man's brains, right? Give us the analytical breakdown of Friday night. Ngannou stepping in against AJ. How do you see these silhouettes playing out?
Oh, I think it starts at breakfast with AJ waking up and realizing what he's got on his table for the rest of the day, and he's going to struggle to chew that toast in the morning. Because, you know, you've got to think, he is rebuilding his career right now. He's fallen a couple of times. He's stumbled. He's in the public eye and everyone's watched it. And you know, he has great heights to fall from. And he's fighting a guy that's never won a professional boxing match, that punches like a truck, that has got a strong neck and back and cannot be moved and pushed around. If this starts to go south for AJ in the first couple of rounds, Ngannou is going to start to bully him. He's got the confidence that he's got 10 rounds under his belt now, and he knows he's got the gas to keep punching into the 10th round. I feel far more confident about Ngannou this time around than I did against Fury. I thought Fury would get to him, but I feel like Ngannou is going to be able to hit AJ with enough power, even through his guard, to rattle his brains enough to start to make him feel uncomfortable. And I expect Ngannou to even his record out.
I don't think it will have passed you by that on Friday night just gone, we had a quality super welterweight European title fight. Sam Eggington, trying to become a 2-time European champion, sadly fell short against the brilliant Abbas Barrow. Well, Abbas very kindly joined us on Saturday's show to celebrate.
I'm a happy European champion. I can't feel any better today. Well,
Adam Casual was just talking about fresh there, mate. I'm not sure how fresh you are after that one. I mean, that was a 12-round war. Sam Eggington is a tough old cookie, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very tough, and he's a great warrior. I have much respect for him, and it's been an honor sharing the ring with him.
But from your point of view, getting the opportunity to fight for the vacant super welterweight European title, Obviously, this gets cold. You end up having to go technically away from home. I know that Sam isn't Telford, but it's technically away from home. You getting the opportunity to fight there. The majority of the crowd's his crowd. You've got to go in there and you've got to silence those people and get the job done. I'm sure that you might have wanted more of a technical boxing night to show off the skills, but every now and again, mate, you've got to go to war, haven't you? And you ended up having to do that and toughed it out.
Yeah, I mean, like, I couldn't really care about where the fight happens, you know. I was just know I wanted that belt. It's been a long time in the making, and wherever the fight happens, I know I needed to be better than Sam that night. And I was wanted also to prove a point that he's known to be tough, but I can be tougher. And sometimes I could have done it more technical, but I chose to go to war and break him also down. And I think that makes also a special fight.
That's what you actually done, Abbas, wasn't it? You beat him at his own game. I mean, we know what Sam Higginson's all about. He comes forward, he's rough, he's tough, and he just likes to have a fight. But you actually met him in the centre of the ring and you sort of beat him at his own game. And I think that's where you come victorious. I mean, your will to win was incredible in there. I mean, there was times there, I'm speaking as an ex-fighter, I know when there's times in there where you go, well, you've got to bite down on your gum shield. And that shows, that's the difference between champion and challenger. And I think you showed that skill set in there last night.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm known to be also technical, but I'm a whole fighter, boxer, you know, and I have many skills, and it was time to show another side also to get some excitement and do also a bit of statement. So yesterday was a movie night for me, and also with such a great opponent. It was one for the books.
It's a statement night, is what it was last night, Abbas, because I think the majority of fans that have followed your career, maybe pre-professional, I'm sure a lot of people came across you when you fought Pat McCormack in the amateurs, and obviously you beat Pat on that particular night. They saw a very technical, well-rounded, well-sound boxer. And going into last night's fight with Sam, I think a lot of pundits going into it would say Sam has to drag Abbas into a bit of a war if he's going to have a chance. But you met that, matched it, rose above it, won the fight. I don't understand why one of the judges has given that 114-114. Just throw that to one side for a second, because you did, in my opinion, win nine of the 12 rounds. But you've made a bit of a statement to the rest of the division. And obviously last night, yes, you become European champion, but it's also an eliminator with the WBA on world level. We all know that the EBU holds high rankings with the WBC. So now, my friend, we're starting to talk about some serious super fights going forward at the super welterweight division.
Exactly. That's a position I want to be in. You know, I faced a lot of inactivity in the past. And, you know, like coming out like that yesterday night and make a big statement and presenting myself also to the scene was the goal. And I'm happy it went so good, and also with the a world title eliminator. I'm on a good road now to big fights, and also chasing my dream becoming world champion. And I love good fights. I love hard fights, challenges. I want to be in great fights, and I'm happy I put myself in this position. And so we can, in the future, get something big done.
Yeah, Abbas, I think what you done last night was you ticked a lot of boxes, because, you know, that was fan-friendly, that fight. You showed that you can tough it out. You haven't just got that boxing skill, that pedigree that comes from the amateurs, but you showed that you can tough it up and you can get rough and tough in there as well. And that is, like I say, that is TV-friendly, fan-friendly. You got that world ranking. I mean, what is the roadmap for you? You're not going to be wanting to hang around now at this European level. Obviously, world honours is in your sights now. What is the ideal roadmap for you?
Yeah, definitely. I want to be as soon back out again, and I want to continue the journey towards world titles. Either is if the world title shot is next or whatever, but it has to be big and it has to be challenging. And I mean, I'm more than ready for that, and I feel like also I'm ready to face anyone in this division. And yeah, I'm just waiting for the for the next opportunity and see what fights we can make with the management and promotion. And yeah, basically, I'm just waiting for the calls to go back to, into the gym.
Let's cause some trouble here, Abbas, right? Well, you don't have to do any staring. We're going to stir it up now and see if we can get these fights moving a little bit quick for you, okay? I'm sure it hasn't passed you by that it was. We're hearing rumours that it might not be happening. Fingers crossed that these rumours are incorrect. But Madrimov against Kurbanov was supposed to be going ahead for the WBA version of the title at 154. These titles obviously all held previously by Charlo. Charlo obviously stepped up to fight Canelo and some of these belts got stripped and what have you. So we're hearing there's maybe a little bit of doubt over that. Now, I know that a week is a little bit quick to turn it round for you. All right, mate? So,
yeah.
Obviously, this gets you a number four ranking with the WBA. We've got Virgil Ortiz sat there at number three. That'd be a nice, tasty little fight, wouldn't it, for a world title, you and Virgil Ortiz?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I'm ready for anyone in this division, and there's no one you can mention now where I have to think of or something. Like, I think they're all good challenges, and it's just like, hey, give me the names, set the date, and I'll go to the gym and make it work. So, if that's the fight which is next, I would love it. It's a great challenge, and I will be ready to go for it.
When you're thinking time-wise, my man, obviously last night's it's a proper fight, so you've earned a little bit of rest. When are you thinking of getting back in there?
I was training this morning already, and I feel like... now this motivates me as well. Like last night, I've been looking a long time for that cracking fight, and I just want to go straight back. Of course, I will rest like 1-2 weeks at home, but I will stay in shape. And like I said, like I'm ready. I feel good today, and as soon as we get a fight done, I would like it ASAP. Even like, let's say June or even end of May, I could be ready. I'm looking forward to go back to camp soon and then go back into fighting. I mean, I had a long time of inactivity, and now I just want to be in the ring.
There you have it. That's how Fight Night looked on Saturday just gone. All leading in nicely to this Friday night showdown. Make sure you listen to TalkSport throughout the whole course of the week as we build up towards AJ Ngannou. Then come and join myself and Spence and a panel of top quality guests, including the one and only Mr. Carl Froch, for a Friday night extravaganza. We've got a watch along coming your way, which is available on the TalkSport Boxing YouTube channel, and it'll be available across the TalkSport network to listen to as well. So make sure you come and join us this Friday night for that on Talk Sports. See you then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.